listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. Dr. James Mitchell has been telling us a little bit about insights into the mind of our enemy that he gained in specifically talking with one of the key leaders, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Now, we were discussing right before the break how the true believers, the Al-Qaeda wing, the ISIS wing, the Boko Haram wing, believe that only the most stringent and pure Quranic view of Islam and the most even extreme view, even based on the Quran, of what Islam should be, is acceptable to them. And that, like you said previously, they weren't going to stop kicking the Coke machine just because they didn't get a can every time they put their money in. Are they capable of rousing continued support? I mean, is there that level of... I mean, obviously, ISIS was able to recruit large numbers of folks to come to Iraq and Syria to fight with them. You know, they've now moved to Libya. They're in Afghanistan. Are they going to continue to be that magnet, and the folks who believe in that will continue to flock to that banner?
Well, here's part of the problem that we don't seem to acknowledge. In the most fundamental versions of Islam, regardless of what it is, people at some point in their life have to participate in the jihad. And as you know from your past experience in the military in Afghanistan and in other places like that, there's a fighting season where young men converge on whoever the enemy of the moment happens to be and fight that person because they, some of them just for cultural reasons and religious reasons, need to check the box. And then from them, the true ideologues and the people who go on to be the senior leadership or the suicide bombers or whatever get sort of moved out of that. The other piece of that thing is that if you can't actively participate in the jihad, you need to support it. Now, here's what I mean. In order to wage a war of ideas, that you first have to produce a fertile ground so that the ideologies that promote a global jihad can take place. That means they have to build and sustain funding sources. And one of the things that is part of their normal tithing is that some portion of it, if you're following the most fundamental views of Islam, gets bled off into the thing. You have to develop some kind of a recruiting effort. You got to, you know, solidify public acceptance of their activities. And you got to find and acquire materials, and you got to develop power bases and local political power and safe havens. And all of that calls for things other than fighting that allows true believers to participate in the jihad so that they can, you know, fulfill what they need to fulfill to get into paradise. And so we're not up against just a few people who are trying to, attack a Humvee in Afghanistan. We're up against this megalithic. We're seeing the tip of the iceberg, but underneath there's this enormous support process that's taken place. And the bad part about this is that the political correctness that's been emerging lately has us not wanting to attack that underground support base because it seems more removed from the actual jihadist activities themselves. But without that, without funding, without local support, without safe havens, they wouldn't be able to do it.
Now, I think you've hit on one of the key problems we've had in our counterterrorism mentality overall, is it's very easy to understand how bad the violent jihadists are. Al-Qaeda knocked down the Twin Towers. You know, ISIS is burning people alive in cages. Boko Haram is kidnapping schoolgirls and selling them into sexual slavery. Those things are horrific, and people have no problem at all getting their minds around how bad that is and that those people are our enemies. The problem has come when and people like President Obama and others have tried to marginalize those folks and ignore what you just said, that absent a support mechanism, those people can't fight in a vacuum. And I think, you know, when you say it's a few extremists who hijacked a great religion, well, not necessarily, because if you poll the Muslim community, which Pew International has done, hardly a conservative organization, they found that support for suicide bombing among Muslims worldwide was as high as 28%. So those are the people who I think you're talking about there, who are paying their taxes in the mosque, who are doing the other pieces of this. And while they may not be cutting heads off, they're enabling that. And I think we have to have a mentality and a strategy that accepts and deals with that.
Yeah, I think we have to take proactive action to not sound like some sort of a talking head, but to deny, disrupt, and degrade. We have to have some tactical approach to doing that. And part of it is by not allowing them to develop power bases in local mosques and religious centers. You know, one of the things Khalid Sheikh Mohammed told me, KSM, the guy behind 9/11, told me was, they don't have to defeat us. They're going to win. All they need to do is persist long enough for us to defeat ourselves by accepting their version of and acquiescing to. Because that's what they really, if we simply acquiesce to what the Islamists who believe in the spread of Sharia power in the world, who actively reside in the United States now, if we just acquiesce to that, they will eventually be in charge. Because they are, you know, they're having more children than we're having. They're building more mosques than we are churches. And at the same time, the military arm of radical Islam is destroying churches, crucifying, you know, Christians, and they're engaged in this sort of eradication. And ordinary Americans are breeding at less. They're barely replacing themselves, you know. So that's that. If they do nothing, if we do nothing at all, you know, at some point in the future, we're going to look a lot more like Indonesia in terms of the religious component of the thing. So it's a problem.
Now, you bring up Indonesia. Well, I was in First Special Forces Group. Our area of operations was the Pacific Rim. And obviously, Indonesia being the most populous Muslim country. And I deployed there multiple times. It was a relatively unextreme, pretty mellow Islamic country. You know, they did not have, and this was in the 90s, you know, so it's been a while. But that country and Malaysia and other countries with majority Muslim populations have been leaning more toward extremist views. You know, the overall direction of Islamism seems to be dominating, as opposed to the moderate version, you know, that the folks here, CARE and other organizations that purport to represent the Muslim community would have us believe. You know, I don't see that. And especially given, you know, the changes to Turkey, to other places where the more extreme, the more Salafist, the more Wahhabist version of Islam, and from the Iranian side, you know, the more 12th Imam Shia version, the far more radical and dangerous version seem to be ascendant. And is that something we can counter without having a much broader conversation with the Muslim people?
No. You know, I spent a fair amount of time traveling around the world, and I've worked with, beside doing interrogations with Muslims, and the vast majority of Muslims that I met are just, especially the ones who are U.S. citizens, you know, they just want to live their life and raise their kids in security, and they care as much as I do about the future of the United States. So we're talking really about the Islamists. And those Islamists who are in the United States who believe that Sharia should be in charge of the entire world, if they're willing to try that with the voting booth, and if they're willing to try that through some means other than violent means or revolution, more power to you, because that's what freedom of religion and freedom of choice means in a democracy. It's up to us to protect our way of life. It's not up to us to expect them to protect our way of life, because they're not going to do it.
Let's dig a little bit deeper into that after the break. Folks, we're talking with Dr. James Mitchell, one of the key architects of the CIA's Enhanced Interrogation Program and a man who had long conversations with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. This is Jim Hansen. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio. We'll be right back after the break.